This is Turner Mining Live, where we give you a behind-the-scenes look at how we're innovating to change the game and grow a business in an ancient but still booming industry.
What is up, guys? We are back.
We're back.
Turner Mining Live podcast. You really struggled with that
one. Yeah, that one was different. I've never had this beer before, but it's Bloomington Brewing Co., so I'm sure it'll be good.
Shout out. Yeah. We still are not sponsored, so looking for beer sponsors or White Claw sponsors, whatever Ooh. Beverage they can send.
That's better than I thought it was going to be.
This one is going to be, I say this every time, but they're fun every time. This one's going to be a ton of fun. This guy, well, first of all, to my right is Mr. Thomas Hahn.
What's up, everybody?
The guy that keeps me out of trouble. This guy, first of all, is a pro podcaster. You've probably done more podcasts than we have.
Seriously. I doubt that.
I'm sure you have. This guy, where do we even start with this guy? This guy is non-mining. So if you tune in to hear mining things, this one won't be the one. This one is going to, this one's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of reasons. Before I get into your name, and then we're not going to do our podcast the way you do yours. This guy's got his own podcast. Really interesting how you guys set your podcast up. This guy is interesting for so many reasons. He and I connected, I don't know if it was social media. I don't know. You'll have to tell that story here in a second. Yeah. Known each other for a few years, became like instant friends. Yeah. I was just telling the story as we were walking across the street a little bit ago with some of our other guys. The first time I met this guy, we hit it off, right? Like right off the bat, spend the afternoon together. We get out to go to our trucks to leave. We're parked near each other. We are driving the exact same pickup truck, same model, same wheels and tires, identical. And so it's been a joy and a pleasure to get to know this guy. You drove up here today just to hang out.
I did.
It's a good day.
No agenda, no business to tackle. We've just spent the day together learning from each other. I've learned more from you today than vice versa. But we have Mr. Jeff Stevens here with us. Jeff, introduce yourself.
Thank you. I apologize. Allergies have zapped my voice a little bit.
I'm sorry.
Up front.
You sound like a little bit of a West Virginia country singer.
Ooh.
You could pull that off.
Oh, for sure. Listen to me. Yeah, I've got that hillbilly accent.
Well, we learned just a little bit ago, and I learned this for the first time, you actually had a career in music. You've got a music video floating around that I can't wait to go find.
Oh, that's how you're going to start it off, huh? Okay. That's been a long time ago, but I was in a rock and roll band.
What's the name?
Oh, goodness.
You don't want to tell people?
I don't care. You know, it's called Nova Flow.
All right. Catchy, huh?
I love it.
Okay. So, yeah, and you're right.
Sounds like an allergy drug.
Well, I could use some right now. You're right. That's really good, actually. Maybe I could go back and sell a
jingle.
I am a non-mining guy, which means I can come on here and say anything I want to.
Yeah. So you're going to be humble. Jeff's a humble guy. So I normally let the guests give a 2-minute intro, who they are, what they're doing, why the heck they're here. Jeff's a guy, 3,000 plus employees, been in business, started business 11, 12 years ago. Called Village Caregiving. Really interesting guy. When you go to this guy's hometown and you walk around downtown and you go sit at a bar or you order food at a restaurant, everyone in town knows this guy. He's a celebrity. And it's not because of your music background.
Nova Flow.
Charismatic. Can't say enough good things about this guy. It's rare that I spend like intentional time, and Thomas knows this about me. It's really rare I spend intentional time with people just catching up or just chatting, or I never get advice from anyone.
I mean, we have like four friends.
Literally four. And two of them are like on the chopping block currently. So it really is cool, the friendship that we've built. But tell like the people that are listening that don't know who the heck you are. Why are you here? What have you like? How did we get to know each other? Where did all this even start?
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy story, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, one of the president of business operations at Village Caregiving, named Aaron, came across a podcast that you were on called Entree Leadership.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the Dave Ramsey thing. Yeah.
He comes to me and says, you should listen to this. You should listen to this guy. It sounds like every conversation that I've heard in this office over the last year. Piqued my interest. Listened to it. And I think, number one, you and I probably have a lot in common anyway. But we've
both gone, really good looking.
Well, obviously. Same truck. I mean... You know,
face for radio.
Pretty
face
cool. Radio. Yeah. Right. I listened to it and there was a part of me that was like, I got to talk to this dude. Like it really did. I almost got emotional listening to it. I'm kind of embarrassed to tell you guys this.
That was a deep podcast. That was back, probably late 2019, maybe.
Yeah. That was pre-COVID.
Well, and the title of that was What People Don't Tell You About Being a CEO, mm-hmm. or something yep. close to that. And that was pretty spot on because there, and you've alluded to this before, that seems like a glamorous position and you get to call all the shots, et cetera. And that, a lot of that's true. And that's the good part of the job. The bad part is you're left to sort through the absolute biggest, hardest, most stressful decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Your own conscience is oftentimes your only guiding star, and that can be a very lonely place to be. So I hear you talk about all of those things on that podcast. And I must have listened to it two or three times. I felt like I've never met this man, but I have a friend out there in the world that gets a lot of the stuff. Like just through the cosmos, whatever. Like we're on the same page.
Yeah.
So I come back and I tell Aaron, you know what? You were spot on, man. Like that was crazy. He took the initiative to reach out to you on LinkedIn.
Yep.
Which, what is the odds you're even going to see it or write back?
You know, it's crazy. And anyone that's ever messaged me on LinkedIn will agree with this. I never reply to a direct message on LinkedIn because you get a million of them. All the messages I get are Chinese crusher parts or used tires for sale or whatever. So I just don't even, the fact that someone that is in a caregiving industry, which I know nothing about, have no connections in, send me a message. And I don't remember how spammy or scammy his message was. Clearly, it was good enough that it got me to respond.
Must have been good.
It was a God thing because I don't know. Yeah. Really odd that I even responded.
Yeah. And you were very, very gracious. Agreed to do a Zoom. We talked for a half an hour or so. Met up for the first time at a corporate meeting of our company. You were nice enough to come down again, very gracious with your time, and I'm not just blowing smoke because we're on the podcast. I mean, you've always been really good that way, and I appreciate it a lot. And our friendship went from there, and that's something that's really important to me. And you're right, it does seem kind of weird. Why would I wake up this morning and drive 4.5 hours to come set up my laptop at Turner Mining Group, sitting here with Thomas and you, and we, you know, had a great day today. Why do I do that? It's because I value the relationship and the friendship enough that I want to put that kind of energy into it. Otherwise, if you don't do that, you're somebody that I just see maybe once every year or two.
Yep.
Yep.
And my takeaways when I leave here every time are so valuable. It can become almost like an addiction. Like, I got to get back there. Every time I go, I level up. I get better. I have a good time, and I love these people. Yeah. Like it's everything about it is so good that it makes you want to go invest your time and energy into doing it. And I'll get home tonight at 2:00 in the morning, and that's completely fine. This will fill me up for who knows how long.
That's awesome. It's so funny you say that because I feel the same way. But as you know, as my kids are starting to get older, my wife and I all the time talk about, we want to be the house where all the kids come, right? We don't want our kids mm-hmm. going, we don't have a problem with them going to other people's houses, but if we had our choice, like we want all the kids to come to our house. Mm-hmm. We want it to be an environment, like a welcoming environment where kids come and have fun. I feel the same way about this office.
Yeah.
I mean, I want people to come to this office, and I love that you do this and other people do it also, but like come and hang out, sit in any one of these meetings, right? Nothing is super secret. And I tell people all the time, some people take us up on it. Some people don't. I wish my own brother-in-law would do this more. Dude. Like just come and hang out.
Griff.
Yeah. Come on. You know, come and hang out. And the fact that you come and do this, it was the first thing you said to me today when I saw you. It was like, I can't see you once a year and that be good. And I feel the same way. I mean, it's a weird, people probably listen to this like, what is this bromance? Like, I'm not even that kind of guy.
It's a little embarrassing. Keen hates people.
Thomas knows this. I'm like, I don't talk to that many people. No, I really don't.
I shouldn't say that. Keaton loves people, truly loves and cares about people. But Keaton is so focused on what we're doing here at Turner. And frankly, wants to serve the people here at Turner very well. And I know you honestly carry that as a burden in a lot of ways. That like any moment that you're not spending doing that, you're like, man, I'm like wasting this time where I could be doing this other thing. And so it's why I joke that we have four friends, because basically we play golf with those guys. Like that's the one time like we like break out of the office to go play golf. And so that's literally the group, and like that's as far as it goes, because beyond them, like we would rather be investing our time into like our people and all of that, or into bettering ourselves, right? So like Jeff's currently doing Stegen, but like we've all been through, and there's a lot of time investment for a year into a leadership development program, right? But that's with the purpose and the intention of bettering ourselves so that we can go serve the organization better. But like to just go randomly hang out with some stranger is kind of odd. When you first told me, you're like, hey, dude, we got to go spend time with Jeff. I'm like, okay, you know, I wonder where this is going.
What's the angle?
Yeah. And he's like, they do caregiving. I was like, okay, now I'm really stretching to see the angle here.
It's not a mining opportunity. It's not a customer. Exactly. It's not an employee. Like
exactly.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately could not make that company meeting, but I was going to try to come down. I was traveling for work, but yeah. It's cool. It's a cool story.
Well, if we only see each other once a year, we just don't have enough of a connection for it to form that kind of meaning.
Agreed.
And the stuff you're talking about where it's like a family atmosphere, you wish people would come in, hang out in the office. That right there is real life stuff that can inform the culture of the company and give your employees, in my opinion, fulfillment in their life, career,
yep.
The whole nine. Because if this is the analogy I make. So back in our office, say someone's personal, one of the most important things to them in their life is family. If you had to assign values, right, that would be probably on your list. Yeah. That person comes to the office, and maybe they work in HR department, and they open up all day long wage garnishments and unemployment forms and employee verification forms. They clearly, there's nothing that fun about that.
No.
Okay, they don't love their job because they like doing that.
Yeah.
It's not the work. It's that we have created an atmosphere where we care about each other like family, and that's important to them, and that's what gives them fulfillment in their role, no matter what the task is. So what you're doing here is the same idea, and it's awesome. I love being here. Thank you guys for letting me come and crash.
He should see a site, because that vibe is here, but on site, I mean –
oh, it's
that's even, the most family yeah, of
it's even
family.
Stronger.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
It's even stronger. And you know, this place is a lot of fun. I get my most fulfillment when I am out on site and you know, in
I'd
the
love
action.
To go.
It'd be fun.
Give me a hard hit.
So we got the bromance out of the way. People heard like who you are, where you're from, why people probably scratch their heads, like, okay, still don't quite understand this and how this works. I think you and I are in the same boat. We don't really quite understand how this all came to be either, but we're enjoying it and having fun. Talk to me, and you touched on it a little bit about how lonely it can be, right, in our roles and our positions. And I've talked about this a lot, and I think you're hearing more people talk about this, founders, CEOs, you know, how lonely and anxiety ridden you can be over the grind and over the years. One of the things that we resonate with the most, especially early on when we first got to know each other, was like the bad days, right? The days where things aren't going well, you have employee problems, customer problems, whatever, all we deal with are problems. What was your perspective 3 or 4 years ago when we first started chatting, and how has that changed? What's your perspective now, like on a bad day? What do you do on a bad day?
On a bad day, you know,
and this is turning live, so you have to be honest. This is live.
I drink a giant barrel of whiskey and fall over. I don't do that. I the best habit, honestly, is to make yourself the same way I made myself get in a truck this morning at 6 a.m. and get my butt here. Pick up your phone, call someone in your organization or really out, whatever the thing is, and have a conversation about what the day's been like. Have some camaraderie about it. Guarantee you will feel better when you hang that phone up.
Yep.
And sometimes that's you for me, and I really appreciate that a lot. We've had talks like that.
Oh, yeah.
And when we say that it's lonely, again, that's not – I'm not sad. I'm not depressed. It's not that kind of a feeling. It's just that – you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about how if you are the CEO of a company – Or higher up there, whatever. You surround yourself with really smart, talented people, and they do an awesome job. And then there's a few problems that make their way all the way back up to you.
Yep.
By definition, those are the hardest, worst problems that there's probably no great answer to.
Yeah.
That is really what the role calls for, though. You're just going to have to make some decisions and make calls, and you hope you're doing right by everybody. There are thousands of employees that depend upon it. There are really close friends in the company, people that I genuinely love, that I just hope I'm doing it right. And then sometimes you make decisions and it really causes you to become someone else than who you are. And so when you ask me, am I the same as I was 3 or 4 years ago? Yeah. Of course I'm not. It's hard for me to remember who that person was. I can think back to the beginning of my career, and I don't remember that version of Jeff Stevens. I just don't. Yeah. And I try to sit with that thought and put myself back there and think like I thought then. That person's gone.
Yeah.
It's literally a stranger to me, the same as that guy I can see through the window walking down that sidewalk.
Yeah.
I don't know that person anymore.
Yeah.
And who I will become in the future is also the same thing. But what you do is you become a different version of yourself, and you do real big, bold, hard things in that role. And sometimes you wonder, am I going to get laughed at when I go back in the office? Yep. I make a speech to the company. I know it's not going to be for everybody. I think there's some people that will resonate with it. There are some that are going to think that it's nonsense, and then everything in between. That's just a hard, lonely place to be. And then on top of that, you don't get much feedback about it.
Yep.
Even if people think that it was good, I've learned over years, they will not tell you it's good, because who needs to tell Keaton he did a good job? Like, their perspective is not your perspective. They think, of course he knows that. He's the freaking founder, CEO, owner.
Yeah.
I don't need to compliment him. It's almost would be condescending to him to say, hey, you did a really great job on that Zoom call, on that speech you gave. So they don't say it. Meanwhile, what people don't know is people like us are dying inside for some ounce of a compliment because we have no idea if it was good or not.
Isn't it ironic that they will go tell the 4 or 5 people closest to you, like, hey, I loved that, or hey, I didn't like this part? Never will it come back to you.
Right.
I have to go ask Patton a lot of times, or how did that land? Was that the right?
It's tough because people don't want to come across in the wrong way, right? They are worried about their own reputation in some sense. They are very conscious that Keaton's busy, Jeff's busy. They don't even necessarily want to take your time unless they need to take your time.
Yeah.
Some of these people are actually very capable, right? And actually a lot of them are in both of our organizations, but just globally, some of them are pretty capable and they think, oh, he will figure it out because I figured it out and he did a great job, or he didn't do a great job and needs help here. It's a tough spot. I think your lonely comment's fair. My way of maybe framing it that would kind of get across the not depressed side is it's very isolated. You don't, when we're talking about feedback coming back, not much is coming back. And so you just feel very isolated from like what the reality is or what is being felt inside of the organization. And so just trying to create ways that kind of break down that isolation is you got to be intentional about it, but you still may never get the feedback that you're seeking.
Yeah. And I want to ask you, so, you know, most of the reason we do this podcast, actually the whole reason when we started it was to talk to our employees. This was meant to be a broadcast to our people internally that are out in the fields that we don't normally get to interact with.
And do you mind explaining why?
Yeah, it you know, in my opinion, it was a way to get thought leadership. You know, there's so much good happening here at the office. There's good thoughts there, and there's so many there's so much context that doesn't get leaked out in social media, right? What things are we working on? What ideas do we have? What do the leaders of the company even really believe in?
Yeah.
And why do they believe in them? And that's the stuff that we try to ooze out because it's the most scalable way that we've come up with. We can't be at every site every day. We can't even get to all the sites in a week. And so
we can't even do an all hands meeting due to shift schedules.
Shift schedules, time zones, double shifts, you know, people working 24 hour rotations, whatever. And so this was just a way that we came up with to say, okay, let's not really preach to our people, but let them get a glimpse of what we're really trying to work on behind the scenes. Yeah. We do, fortunately, have other people listen to it that are not employees. Most of those folks are, in my opinion, people that, you know, if you're taking the time to listen to a podcast, and especially on the topics we touch on, like, you're pretty assertive, you want to do something in life. A lot of these people are younger, and they maybe aspire to own a business, start a business, run a business. What would you say to a young person that came to you and said, hey, I want to start this business. What are your thoughts? Do you get, what kind of advice do you give a young person that wants to go start? Because you're a founder. It's rare to talk to founders, especially founders that are as successful as you are, because you're super successful. What would you tell a young person that is looking for advice that's going to go try to start something?
It's a tough conversation, isn't it?
Very.
So I relate to...
I can tell you what I would tell them after you respond.
My guess would be don't.
Am I close? Run far in the other direction as fast, and don't ever think about it again. That's my.
Right. Well, so my son, Cameron, he is a golfer. He plays college golf right now. He wants to be a professional golfer. Okay. I hope he does. On some level, I have to balance this desire for him, well, not a desire, the obligation to be a good parent, give him sound advice to grow up and have success. If you're going to have a family, you want to be able to take care of them, etc. I don't want to crush his dreams. I don't want to say, get your head out of golf and get serious about school.
Yeah. Right?
Because that's not me either, and I don't think that's nice, and I don't like it.
Yeah,
right. There's no right way necessarily to just go through your life, and so I don't want to do that. So somebody asked me this question about should I start my own business. If they're listening to this right now, I find myself in a very similar dilemma. If that is what your heart says, I've got to do this, or I just can't go on, I'll regret it for the rest of my life, then you absolutely should do that.
Yeah.
Do it. because regret is one thing that often cannot be solved. My wife will talk about this a lot, and she's a genius too. She's a psychologist, and she will say, I can treat almost any condition. If you come to me and the thing that you're struggling with is regret of something that's happened, I can't help you with that.
Yeah.
That's tough. So if you got to do it, you're listening to this and I've got to do this, do it. That's it. You should be prepared for it to be probably a net negative on your mental health, which is a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be way more stressed out than you ever thought you would be. And then the hardest part is, if you do have success, it gets 10 times worse. Mm-hmm. That's just, if you're just starting off and you think it's hard and stressful, you haven't even done anything. Wait till you have success with it. Now, all of a sudden, it's going to get hard for real.
Oh, yeah.
Now you've got bigger problems and more people to worry about and all the stuff we're talking about. So when you say run, I get it. You got to have a certain makeup for it, right? Like, be real with yourself. How mentally tough are you? How resilient are you? That's just a good thing for anything in life. Be real with yourself. Be authentic. Can I handle the stuff I'm hearing Jeff and Keaton and Thomas talking about? It's not going to be easy.
No.
And I've got other there's nothing wrong with, I don't want that tough of a life. There are other things I care more about. I have other priorities that mean more to me than trying to succeed in business. That's completely 100% cool.
Yep.
But it's going to be real, real tough. And you better be honest with yourself and be ready for a journey that's going to take you some places you do not want to go.
Yeah. I'll never forget when I told my wife, I had been thinking about it for a long time, a couple of years. I had this crazy guy named Gant trying to convince me to start this for a long time. And I'll never forget the time I told my wife, because my wife was a little bit on the fence, right? We had a 1 year old with one on the way, actually just born. And I'll never forget when I told her, I was like, look, I can't breathe. It was a weird feeling. I was like, I can't breathe living another day not trying this. It was like, yep. I'd rather go broke and lose everything.
Yep.
And have to shovel ditches, you know, I dig ditches with my hand. Like, it was the weirdest feeling. I've never felt it since then, never felt it before then. Had always kind of wondered about starting something. And it got to this point where obsessive doesn't even really capture the feeling. Like, there was no other option, I felt like.
Yeah.
Thomas calls me unemployable. So maybe that was what I was feeling. I don't know.
Well, in some senses, founders are, right? They have these oddities, some obsessive, some just like so curious, some, you know, they take on different aspects, but they don't. I liked your I couldn't breathe, right? Like,
yeah, like if someone told me, if I'm listening to these words 7 years ago, we're going to celebrate our 7th anniversary in 2 weeks as a company.
Hey, congrats.
If I was 7 years ago and listening to these words, I think I would say, yeah, those two guys are idiots. I can't run the other way.
Yeah.
Because I can't breathe. Like, I can't think about anything else. I can't do anything else. And so, you know, but now having lived through it, if I could go back and, you know, obviously it's worked out thus far, but if I could go back and tell my younger self, like, man, you don't even have a clue what you're thinking you want. It's just it's a different beast.
It is.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were talking about earlier. That 7 years ago, Keaton is not at all you. Go back farther than that. Think when you were 18 years old, what kind of music you listened to. What you thought about some political stances, whatever the thing is, that version of you as an 18-year-old kid would look at who you are right now and feel betrayed by who you are.
Well, you brought up the camo hat and the steak knife.
tell that story. Yeah. You've been getting me on NovaFlow. Well, let me razz you a little bit. So you meet Shelby, right?
Yep.
And what do you have? You're cutting a steak with a pocket knife. You've got on your camo hat, Bill all rolled up. Look like a complete Delbert. That's Keaton's words.
Yeah. I was a complete Delbert. I didn't just look like one. I was one.
What is a Delbert?
Well,
did you make this word up?
I would have to say my dad probably grew up with some people named Delbert, Colbert, you know, and anytime I would do something dumb, he'd call us names like, well, just Delbert. So I gotta blame my dad for those. And my dad is the master Delbert, like total redneck to the core. But yeah, that's who I was.
Okay. Well, right. But you can't talk to that guy. That guy's not going to listen. Right. Of course he thinks this is ridiculous. Different person.
Yeah.
And Thomas is right. A lot of founders, us included, I'm sure, have an issue with authority. We might be unemployable. There's just something in there. Maybe we're nuts. I don't know what the thing is. Broken. Where if something, so my, this might come out different for you, but for me, if a decision just doesn't make sense, I have a really hard time going with it.
Oh, that's Keaton to a T.
I was on a call yesterday, and I'm gonna tell this story. I'm gonna bleep out some of these parts because it's still a fresh wound. Like, we had this thing happen, and nobody got hurt. Not a big incident. Not a big deal at all. But we make big deals of nothing now because that's kind of the culture we're building, right?
Well, and we are striving
for excellence. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the bar is super high.
Exactly.
And Tucker, who was on our last podcast, one of our fairly new guys, been here a few months, super smart guy. We spent some of the day with him. Mm-hmm. He made this comment, and he's like, "Well, the rule is this." And in my heart, I'm still. If Patton would have said it, I would have probably just ripped his head off. Tucker, I'm like, okay, he's still new. I got a ton of respect for him. I don't want to shell shock this guy this early on. Do you know how much I care about rules? Uh-huh. It's like zero, right. Especially if the rule makes no sense. And this rule, in my opinion, had no merit, didn't make any sense. Tucker was right. It was the rule. It's actually a law. Tucker wasn't citing a rule. He was citing a law. I have very little respect for some laws that are dumb too. Like, if the law, like the plastic straw thing in certain states, like let the people drink 64 ounce Cokes if that's what they want to do, you know. So getting off on a tangent, but I do think people like us have struggles and challenges to overcome. Some of these are, I don't know if you've ever been diagnosed with founder syndrome. Has your Stegen coach gotten into any of that yet? Like,
I think thankfully, you headed me off at the pass. So I kind of got a lot of that out of my system through our friendship before I got to Stegen. But
yeah,
certainly have been there, yes.
So I'm curious how you're a different person now than you were 4 years ago.
Yeah.
We've talked about Stegen. For people that don't know, Stegen is a year-long executive leadership program. It's expensive. I went through it. Gant's been through it. Thomas, you've been through it. Yep. And now you're in the second quarter of it, Jeff. How, and again, we're not getting any kickbacks from Stegen. So please reach out to someone at Stegen.
They love us. Don't
send us a hat or something. You're not the same person you were 4 years ago, Jeff. What are things you're doing, Stegen-esque things, to make you different now and in the future than your previous versions? And we've used the term together, business athletes and stuff, in the past. How do you think about that evolving?
Yeah, not only am I not the same person as 4 years ago, I'm not the same one 4 months ago, which is about how long I've been doing it.
Yeah.
And a funny thing has happened in that course. And you're right. What I've learned in that first quarter especially was a lot of it is self-awareness, self-reflection. Where does my attention spend most of its time?
Yeah.
When I get that feeling, you know, you get that feeling in your gut of like anxiety or just, you just feel bad. Where is that drama coming from? Why do I feel this way? That's been a big deal for me. And so I addressed the class there at the end of the first quarter, and I really mean this, so I'll shill for staying too. It's a 52-week course, and that was only 13 weeks of it. They could have cut it off right then, and I would have gotten my money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
It was that valuable, and I really needed that stuff. And it's making such profound changes in my life that you run into somebody on the street that you haven't seen in a minute. Hey, what's up, man? How's it going? For the most part, I'm just like, oh, it's going good, you know, same old. What I really, if they really wanted to know the truth, I would have to stop and have a conversation about how, oh, you know, I'm just a completely different human being than I was a few weeks ago. Other than that, nothing new at all. That's the truth. That's crazy. But yeah, thanks for getting me into it. By the way, I drop your name there. You guys are like celebrities.
Well, so drop Thomas's name. You should definitely not drop my name. They almost kicked me out twice.
Did they really?
That's a true story. Swear to you. I'll show you the emails.
Yeah. Keaton doesn't love rules, so we do already establish
some of the things I didn't agree with, and so it was hard to get them done on the dashboard. And
yeah. You know, to go back to that really quickly, I won't stay on it too long. So my business partner, one of the co-founders of Village Caregiving named Matt Walker, high school friends, his dad was another genius guy, like perfect score ACT type dude, right? He was a family doctor. Matt and I are a lot alike. We both have that founder gene, whatever you want to call it. His dad was smart enough that he told us, you know, as we're going through college and deciding where we want to steer our life, and then we get out, we both went to law school, he told us, you know, you two guys are probably going to have to start your own business. I don't think you could work anywhere. And he was being loving. Yes, he knew it. Yeah. He could see that, and he was smart enough to actually understand that. And he's right. And another Ben who works for us, his stepdad Dan was our little league coach, and he made the analogy, which is really perfect to me. It informs so much of my life. He would say that I've got some players that'll run through a brick wall for me. You would also run through a brick wall for me. But first, I have to explain to you why it makes sense and what's on the other side of the wall and why we're going to run through it. Because if it doesn't make sense to me like that, it's not just that I have a hard time with it. I just know myself well enough. I won't do it. Yeah. That's why I can't work somewhere. I just leave. It's not going to go well, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not – I sounds like I'm kind of bragging. It's kind of shameful, honestly, but it's the truth.
Well, it leaves you at a spot where you don't really have any other options other than to make it work. Yeah. You know, it, something really weird happened when I started this thing. I didn't have a plan B. Like, I didn't, there was no, like, well, if this doesn't work, I'll go back to the family thing. That ship had sailed, dude. That boat was gone. You hear people say burn the ships. Those ships were at the bottom of the ocean. There was no plan B.
Yeah.
It was make this thing work or go figure out how to bring some money home. My wife wasn't even working at the time. She's a stay-at-home wife. New mortgage. We got a dog. We got kids, you know, and more kids coming out. Like it's a real sink or swim moment that in some of the darkest periods of my life, stuff that I hope I never have to go through again. But I don't know, you always make this comment of do the hard things.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be who I am without those hard things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I grew up, you know, a pretty easy life. There's this joke in our life group that I always, my dumb friends always remind me of. We're going through this circle. There's probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 couples in this small life group. We're doing a little Bible study. This is back when we first got married. And everyone says, well, introduce yourself and tell us about who you are and your upbringing. And everyone got super somber and was like telling all this baggage and these bad things that had happened to them growing up. And I'm like, man, so it gets around to me. Here I am, just redneck as can be. And I'm like, yeah, you know, this is who I am. I'm Keaton. Well, you know, nice to meet you guys. You know, my dog died when I was in high school. That was my thing. And the group has never let me live that. That was the worst thing that had happened to me.
I've said this before, too. There's never been anything really bad happen in my life. Like, bad stuff.
Yep.
You know, did you ever have a dog die?
As a kid. You had a death in the family when you were really young. Like, bad stuff can happen that takes my I had a dog die. Well, had a few of them. I guess that's my thing too. Yes,
you know, and it sounds insensitive. My wife is still when we replay that memory, she's like, "You were just so not empathetic." There's people with some real serious stuff, like childhood trauma.
Yeah, but I mean that's reality, right? Like there unfortunately there's a lot of bad stuff that happens by the grace of God, like that might not have entered into your life by that point in time, but geez.
Yeah, but you get in later in life and life kicks you in the teeth. Exactly. At some point, like I have never met anyone, and I've not lived that much life, but I've never met anyone that life hasn't in some way, shape, or form got them at one point. Yeah. Mine just happened to be in my late 20s and early 30s.
You know, though, I do use that thought that nothing really ever that bad has happened to me as a grounding way on those, we talked earlier, like bad days that you have. I really do try to go back to like, dude, let's get yourself in check here. Okay, we can be a little lonely. We can talk about this. My life's pretty darn good, so let's keep moving forward.
Yeah.
But that's also the more, I'll say, mature Jeff, right? Like that's this Jeff. That might not have been the 15 years ago Jeff. Yeah. I know it wasn't the 15 years ago Thomas. I mean, goodness gracious.
Well, that's also probably the eternal perspective. Yeah. You know, you and I talked earlier today, and I was at a thing in LA a few weeks ago, and one of the CEOs asked a question at the end, like, what do you do on your worst days? And I said, well, to be honest with you, I've tried drinking. I've tried praying. Like, I've tried all the things you can try. To me, it's a mindset shift on my problems are here and now, but my eternal perspective. What is my soul doing for eternity? Yeah. And I'm not going to get into preaching. I could, you know, transform the podcast into Keaton's preaching seminar. That totally changed it for me in business. And the first couple years, I always had a foundation of that, but the first couple years, I didn't lean into that as much as I did later.
Yeah.
It was probably sometime after that Dave Ramsey podcast where I really, because that was a dark period. We were going through some stuff then, personnel stuff, organizational changes, stuff that broke my heart. And you start to lean into a mindset shift of like, man, I'm on this earth for like a vapor. Like this life is over and done with. My life more than likely is half the way over. 45% of the way over.
Mine's half the way
over. Thomas is super old, so his is way more than halfway over. You think about that, you're not here very long.
Yeah.
So, you know. Anyway, we got morbid. I didn't mean to get
morbid. It's not morbid.
You know what I would say? And actually, this is a weird way of linking these two things. You talked about the grit that's required. If you're going to be crazy enough to try something, okay, like you got to be prepared to just only get the problems all the time, et cetera. You know what the other thing is? In a weird way, it's actually optimism, right? When you say, I'm going to take an eternal perspective, you do that because you have hope and optimism in your own eternal perspective. I think that's the other piece that like true founders get. They're going to get told no 10,000 times in a row, and they are ready to pick up the phone the 10,001st time, and they fundamentally believe in their heart of hearts, deepest in their core, that this next one is going my way, and they just have it. And yes, you could think of an eternal perspective as potentially morbid, but I know your eternal perspective and it's actually very hopeful. And so it's like, it's not about, our life being a vapor here on earth. It's like, no, this is what I'm headed towards. And that, even in that weird way, is actually your optimism showing, because you are an optimist big time. And we get on Patton a ton about being a pessimist and saying no to things. And we need him because we also get out there. But I do think there is this resetting that allows for a consistent level of belief in something that founders just have.
Yeah, that's an interesting connection there. I like that.
Yeah.
So that's my, we're both people of faith. We've talked a lot about it. And that hasn't always been the case for me. I'm not proud to say that, but it's real. You know, my faith for me has been cyclical throughout my life. I've had times that I'm very, very close to the Lord. I've had other moments where I'm not even sure there's a God.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it. That's real talk.
Yeah.
I'm in a really good place with that right now. And boy, does that make a difference. You just can't.
Doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, this moment right here is great and fun. And it's like, that's as good as, this might be as good as life gets. Like, the problems that we have and the things that really stress you out, it is just some, on some level, you can just say, none of this matters that much. You know, there's something in my life that I personally believe is more important than this.
Yep.
And it like, what's what you're saying. It changes everything.
Yeah. It gives you hope. Yeah.
Yeah. Like do the whole shove God on you thing. If you're listening to that, that's just one man's opinion that it does something for me.
Yep. Well, I forget if it was on your podcast. I did a podcast with you guys. I don't know if it was on yours. Maybe it was the Dave Ramsey one. I said this, and you repeated this back to me this morning. I don't know how people that start a business and don't have a foundation and belief in God, I don't know how they do it.
I don't either.
I would be an absolute maniac if I had no moral compass and no foundation and hope in that eternal perspective. I swear to you.
You come in here and you do what?
Oh, this glass would be broken.
Right.
The keg would be empty. The streets would be on fire.
Right.
I mean, you name it. It would happen.
Be like, Keaton's coming, drain that keg.
Yeah, like it would be it'd be chaos if it's not chaotic enough. So shifting gears, because that one got sideways.
Don't edit that out.
We don't edit anything.
I don't think we've ever edited anything.
We have never edited 1 second of our podcast. Ever?
I don't think we have.
Ever.
Wow.
That is something Sarah would, she knows how I want this raw.
Oh,
like yeah. Sarah would call me and say, hey, I think we have to bleep this part out.
Oh, she calls me sometimes.
Does she?
And you know what my answer has been every single time? Leave it in. Wow. We have never bleeped one
thing. I didn't think we did.
That's impressive, guys.
Yeah.
I wanted to, and we're still on the fence about how we can make this work. I wanted to make this like a live radio show, like a call-in, where it's just all live.
We did a couple. This was right before COVID, I think. Or maybe it was right after COVID, where we did a couple on Instagram Live.
Oh, that was during COVID.
During COVID, yeah. We're sitting dead next to each other in the middle of a pandemic. Anyways.
We couldn't be next to each other, or so we thought.
Oh, yeah, so we thought. Yeah. So we literally have an iPad up in front of us, Jeff, and Keaton and I are sitting literally shoulder to shoulder with this iPad on both of us. And like, because all of our crews are working, right? Mining is essential. Like, COVID doesn't shut mining down at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they're calling in to this Instagram Live, and we're recording the whole thing as a podcast. It was amazing.
That's great.
Talk about people improving and transforming, though. When we started this podcast, it's been a few years now. I don't know how long we've been doing this. 3 years, maybe? Four? Well, pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, so four.
I was a walking HR nightmare. So the fact that we've not bleeped anything out is truly impressive. Now, I'm better. I've improved. Some would still say maybe a little bit of a...
I don't think the HR thing is the problem. Like, it would have been like if we slipped up on client stuff, like real like issues that go outside of our organization. But I think the fact that we've centered so much of this towards our organization, like you talk about why we do the podcast and all those things, I think that has helped us keep it totally raw, because we're not really talking about like anything that would involve another party.
Yeah. I think the thing that I, at least my opinion, most people resonate with are our screw ups. Like, what have you guys done as you're building the business that you've screwed up? And there's been several. I just told you the example of one. I think I made a $5 million mistake a couple weeks ago. Gantt, my business partner, he slacked me. You were gone. He slacked me this morning, or maybe it was yesterday. I think he slacked me yesterday and said, "Hey, how do you feel?" I can't talk about all the details because it's still ongoing, but he goes, "How do you feel about that thing that happened?" And it was my decision, my thing to sign on the dotted line. We never signed it. we got some feedback here, and just in the last day, he saw some pictures and he's like, "Man, how do you feel about that?" And I'm like, "Dude, I'll be honest. I think it cost us $5 million. I think I made the wrong decision." And I followed my gut at the time. I thought it was the right thing to do. I thought there were too many risks and not enough knowns. And, you know, I told him, I'm like, "Man, we built this company on taking risks and figuring it out. And I played it safe. And it's, I think it was a massive, massive miss for me." And I have plenty of misses. Don't get me wrong. I've screwed up a million different things, but to miss one that badly when we had it right there, I had the contract ready to sign.
Yeah.
And I wish I could talk about all the details, and I screwed it up. But I, you know, to me, that's what's real about this. Like, exactly. I want people to hear, because I think 7 years ago, if I'm starting this business, I'd love to hear that. Oh, this guy who's done more, I've made more good decisions than bad ones. We wouldn't be here if that were the opposite. But I'm curious from your perspective, you guys have scaled way more successfully than we have. How do you think about all those bad decisions you've made in the process?
Just part of it. I really truly don't let that bother me. And I've my executive team, we have meetings, they might get sick of hearing me actually say this. And I'm not trying to let us off the hook. I want excellence as much as anybody else, believe me. I just am very aware that that's part of it. We didn't take $100 million in money to go just build out this massive staff and make a million policies and procedures. And when you're starting off in the first, you know, whatever decade, it's going to be messy. And you're going to do your best and you're going to screw stuff up. And I tell the team, that's totally okay.
Did you think what you just said blows my mind, because I couldn't agree more. The first decade. Did you think when you started this, it would take a decade of messiness to get it right?
Who knows? I don't even think like that. I'm so notoriously bad. I hear these kids that I say kids, like 20, let's say 24, 5 year olds that work at our company, and they have these deeply like thoughtful conversations about planning their life and what they would like to do and who they might like to marry and at what age and how many kids they might like to have. And I'm sitting there like, it's really impressive. I never thought about any of this stuff. Like, my journey to where I'm sitting right now at this table with you, if you want proof of a God thing or just universe or blind luck or whatever your thing is that you call stuff like that, check this story out. Okay. I went to the high school I did where I met the two co-founders of Village Caregiving. We were in the same class, and we graduated with 24 people in the class. Tiny little school.
In the whole high school?
In my grade.
But in...
Yes.
For your grade, you had 24
class, 24 people.
Oh, my word.
So there's three of us. Yours?
Yeah. Like 400 something? Five?
Right. Tiny place. Yeah, so three of us work. And that's a miniature reunion. That's 1/8 of the class. Every day, 12.5% show.
Exactly. Right.
So, but I go there only because I didn't know a soul down there. I didn't really want to go, but I played soccer and they kind of wanted me to, and my dad kind of wanted me to. It came down to I hadn't done my summer reading for the public school I was going to go to, and there's like 2 weeks left, and I really didn't want to do all that homework. So I was like, sure, fine, I'll go to that school. I end up there. I meet these two guys that now we three own the company together. I graduate from high school. I had a short list of colleges. I picked like the other two or three first, actually. And my parents were like, no, you want to go to University of Kentucky. It's not that far away, which is great. No regrets. But I was like, all right, fine. I'll just go to UK then. I go down there. I'm at orientation with my mom. I have no idea what I want to do. I check undecided on the major that day. She says, you can't check that. That looks bad. You need to pick something. And I was being kind of bratty. I was like, oh, all right, fine. So I just checked the first thing in alphabetical order. It was accounting. I'm an accounting major. There's no how way. That happens. Yeah, I never changed it. I just went through school and did stuff. I get to the end of that.
Went through school and did stuff. That is so awesome. You and I are, that's wild.
Go to law school because I don't really want to be an accountant necessarily. Here I am at this. I'm not so sure I've been intentional about anything I've ever done my whole life that much. I tell this story and there's not one word of that that's false. So to say, like 10 years ago, did I think that it, I'm like, I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure, but I'm not sure I thought anything. I just thought we'll do this and let the chips fall where they may. And I do have this, though. I have self-belief in myself that is rare.
Yeah.
And I have real courage about that. I'm proud of myself for it, and I won't shy away from saying that. It's a characteristic that if you do want to start your own business, you need to have a lot of bravery. Oh, yeah. And I happen to have that in there from whatever source, I don't know. And I do work really hard. I have a really high work ethic, and my parents were disciplined, and they pushed me really hard, whether it was school or sports, and held me to a super high standard. So I believe in myself, and I work real hard, and then I just do stuff and think it's going to work out if I do my best. And if it doesn't, that's okay too. And then I kind of, you know, when I talk to the executive team, that's kind of where I'm coming from. It's like, it's okay. No, Aaron will say this, like, we're not GE. We don't have 100 years worth of policy etched in stone up there. We're going to make some mistakes. That's okay. I'm totally okay with it.
Yeah.
Do your best.
And the problem is, if you have 100 years of process etched in stone, some of that process is very dated.
Yeah.
And therefore, you become very stagnant as an organization. We talked about this a little bit with Tucker. Yeah. And it's not that process is a bad thing. It's that it's really difficult to change process. Once it's created, there is so much organizational burden to change it that it just stays. I worked at DuPont previously, huge company, been around literally since the 1800s, almost 1800. They were still running an email program that was killed before I ever had email. And they were still running it. And this is in 2011.
Oh, my God.
And so I'm just like, oh, my gosh. But again, when you then actually break apart that problem, to change email programs, it literally cost them like $1 billion to change the email program. They did it actually while I was an employee, which is kind of crazy. But the amount of effort to change a process, and if that process is not evergreen in some way, shape, or form, oh my word. Like,
yeah.
It's the unfortunate burden of large organizations.
Well, I can tell you, you know, I wasn't super intentional when I was 18 to 27, started the company at 27. I think we share some characteristics, but what I will tell you is I never thought it would take 10 years to become a mature organization. I thought, dude, in 2 or 3 years, we'll have this thing humming. Money will be flying out the other end. Like, I swear to you, I thought when I first started, I thought it was going to take me 30 days to win the first job. And then maybe 6 months, we got like 5 or 6 jobs. And, you know, I'm probably driving a Lamborghini at month 12. Like, I swear to you, if Gant were here, he'd be like, oh, yeah, like we were going to do $1 billion in year two. It took us 10 months to win the first job, and we lost 30 grand on the first job. You know,
you hate to see it.
And I, like anyone that would ask, whether you're internal or external, like, I feel like we are still in warm-ups. Like, we're just finishing warm-ups. The game hasn't even started, and we're getting ready to celebrate 7 years. And we won't even celebrate it. It'll just be a day on the calendar. It'll come and go. Mm-hmm. You know, Thomas might pour tequila shots for a few people because
we'll do
that. That's his thing. But I mean, when you said a decade, I stopped and thought, man, it takes a decade. I don't know that in 3 years we will have it figured out. And, you know, I don't know if it takes a decade.
No, but I bet we won't recognize ourselves in 3 years, which is Jeff's point. Like, Yeah, I think it's crazy. We talk a lot about the pace of change, and I'm curious to get your take on this. And it's a little bit buried in how you think about yourself, but part of the reason why we don't recognize ourselves or the organization a year ago, and it's like, oh my gosh, that's only a year, but the pace of change is so fast, and hopefully that change is improvement, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm curious how you think about keeping up with that pace of change.
I like to go really, really fast all the time. And the people in the office would make fun of me for it, maybe. I don't know, because I'll set goals that are really aggressive.
Yeah.
Aggressive timelines. The saying that some of the people that came from, a lot of them came from the same organization. I won't say which one, but their joke is, where I used to work, if they said something's going to take 6 weeks, that meant 6 months. Here at Village Caregiving, if you say it's going to take 6 weeks, it's probably 6 days. And part of my mantra, this is something, if you got access to my journal, I've written about this to myself. I believe that a leader should, two things are really important. And this is just a Jeff take, right? Don't hold this, you know, against me. I didn't read it in a book. I'm just going off script here. I think that a leader of the company, if you want to have a lot of success, that person needs to be right. Not all the time, that's impossible, but a whole lot. They got to be right a lot. You got to be right way, 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 way more than you're wrong.
Yep.
And whether you're right or wrong, I believe you just got to go real fast. Real fast. You got to go do the right things real fast. And if you screw it up, you want to do that fast too. Get it over with, out of the way, learn next thing right. And now you're back on the right train for a minute.
Yep.
But I really believe that you got to go real fast. And a lot of the times the feedback I will get is, well, Jeff, there's no way. We can't do that in that time frame. I say, okay. And these are from really smart, talented, passionate, bought-in people. And the people that work at Village Caregiving are freaking amazing. Like, I am the luckiest guy in the world. I don't have to motivate our corporate staff. They care about it as much as me. So I'm lucky in that way and thankful for them. But what they will say, because it's human nature, is we can't do that in that much time. Okay. What would it take for us to do that in that much time? I'm going to get out a notebook here and I'm going to make a list of it. Look around the table at each other. Well, we need to hire somebody to do X. Okay. One hire. What else? Well, we need to probably build out some kind of guideline, and, you know, like a manual for how to do this new project. Okay. Make a manual, hire somebody else. What else? And real quickly, you'll learn that's about it. Yeah. Like, that's it. That's all you're telling me that it takes to get this thing over the finish line. I can do that. I'll go have that done. Ricky tick. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Let's go real, real fast. And then the challenge is, everybody's bought in on it because the timeline is aggressive. Now it's a challenge, not just for me. It's for the whole team. Yeah. We can do this, and it's high five and in a spirit. And then if you don't get it done in time, that's okay too. You just get as close as you can.
Yeah.
And then at the end, remember to celebrate that victory when it does get over the finish line. Otherwise, employees will just feel like we did that.
Yeah.
And there was no like end to it.
And if your 6 week project, you were pushing it to be done in 6 days, and okay, it takes a seventh day, you're still 5 weeks ahead of what you thought, right? Because you pushed to understand what the limitations were and figure out what bottlenecks existed and just eliminated those.
Sure. But do you understand, though, it's really important that I don't come at it from a place of browbeating the employee
Them,
I want this done by blank.
Yeah.
I'm your teammate on this. I believe we can all do it, and I'm going to pitch in and be the grunt man that works with it. I'll be a cheerleader. Let's go. Let's get in on this together. Yep. And it's a fun thing all of a sudden, instead of people stressed out at work because some crazy boss wants some crazy timeline.
Yeah.
We're all in this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Love that.
So a couple things. One, I'm reading right now Elon Musk biography by Walter Isaacson. It's a great book. I told you about it earlier. It's one of the best books I've ever read. I'm halfway through it. It's like 700 pages. A gift from Patton. One of the things Elon does, whether you love Elon or hate him, he has these phases or chapters in his life where he's trying to do some big task, launch a rocket, right? And he gives these huge lofty goals, very short timelines, and he'll sleep on the factory floor as they're trying to hit this goal. One of the goals was they were trying to produce 5,000 Teslas a day out of their Fremont, California factory. Everyone said it's impossible. Like, the most we can do is 1,000 a day. Like, 1,000 cars a day is a lot.
Yep.
You know, and I'm not going to spoil it if you want to go read the book details, like, they hit 5,000 cars a day. I'm not going to tell you how, but, like, it is through massive action. It's getting into the details. One of the things, I'm in the part now where him and Jeff Bezos are kind of going at each other, and he kind of mocks Bezos a little bit to say, well, the reason Blue Origin rocket hasn't done what SpaceX rocket has done is because Jeff is not in the details.
Correct.
He's not forcing the excellence on his engineers. Elon is super into the details, like almost to a point that drives everyone insane, right? He knows how much a bar of steel costs for this one part. Right? Like, he knows the exact dollar amount this bar of steel costs for this huge rocket. This rocket's four stories tall. I say all that to say, A, go read the books. It's amazing. But B, how do you think about that? I know you're not Elon, and I know you don't, like, rule the same way Elon does. But when you talk about, like, this concept of excellence, how much of that do you push onto your team? How much of that do you, you know, take on yourself? You and I have kind of been on this journey together where we're both pushing each other a little bit to become better versions of ourselves outside of business. What would you say to someone that asked you about excellence in business or excellence in, you know, your career personally?
Yeah, excellence. Okay, so it's hard to achieve excellence, but I can tell you some things that will not be the reason that we won't be excellent. It will not be because we are afraid of failure.
Okay.
It will not be because we are afraid to take chances and think really, really big ideas like 5,000 cars in a day. We're not going to shy away from this stuff. And especially, it will not be because we don't think we're good enough to do it. I will rail against that all day long. If you want to self-limit how good you believe you can be, you're not going to, there's your limit. You're not going to get there. You're not going to have excellence. You have to believe and get the people around you to buy in and believe we are worthy of this. We are excellent. We're going to have to work really hard to get there. Yeah. We're going to have to continue to consume the right materials, whether that's books, podcasts, relationships, mentors, whatever the thing is, be open, be curious, and above all, be humble. Humility is the thing that unlocks all of that stuff. Yeah. I don't know everything. Yeah. I want to keep learning.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask somebody on my team to grow and develop and be the best version of themselves while I sit behind some desk and I'm not willing to do it myself.
Yeah.
So I don't ask anybody to do anything that I'm not willing to do myself. And we're all going to be in this together. And if we mess it up, that's okay. Yeah. We're not going to be afraid of that. So there's things that keep you from having excellence that are as important as the things that actually make it excellent, in my opinion. You can't be afraid of messing up. You can't self-limit how good you believe you can be. That will keep you from excellence.
And you got to be humble enough to learn, to learn.
Yes.
Yeah, learner's mindset. That was one of the most impactful things I learned versus having a knower's mindset. I know it all. I've done it all.
Yeah.
Been doing this for 30 years. Just listen to me versus the guy that says, no, you know, let's go figure out a new way. What do you say to somebody on your team or in your organization that you just, you know, you've witnessed, man, they are not pursuing excellence. They don't have the attitude for it. they're not chasing after it. They may not even be thinking about excellence as a concept in what they're doing. They're just punching the clock, checking in, checking out. It's a job.
That person's not going to work very well with me. And it's not because we're going to fight about it or argue. In fact, it's going to be the exact opposite. I'm not going to get emotional or mad at all. I'm going to help them try to succeed in life. It's just probably not going to be with me. And I really mean that. I mean, there's an aspect where you want everybody to be their best. And man, that means so much to me. I want people to just be happy. I've been at different points in life where I'm happier than others, and I know what that feels like. It sucks. Like, I want everybody to have a good, happy, fulfilled life. I can't control what happens to them whenever they go home and their personal life, but in as much as I get to control that 8-hour block when they come to work, I want that to be a real huge, positive, fulfilling part of their life. If they're just punching a clock and coming in, they're only hurting themselves. That's sabotaging their own goals and dreams and happiness if they were honest about that thing. And I'm happy to be the jerk that will have hard conversations to help them get there because it's my job on some level. And sometimes I shy away from that because it's not fun. It's not like I can walk into a conversation in some office and get on somebody or give them constructive criticism. I don't enjoy that stuff. I go home and I need a glass of wine because I feel like crap about it. But what if I don't do that? How am I helping that person? That's a disservice to them. It's a disservice to the company, and it's my responsibility to do it. So I got to keep getting better so that I can help them do that. And if the person just ultimately cannot get over the hump, I really mean what I say. I'll love you for the rest of life, and I'll write a letter of recommendation and be honest in it as I can be, and I will help you. It just isn't going to be here, and there's no emotion, and it's just like you just can't do that here.
Yeah. That's hard.
But I mean, that was unbelievably well said.
Yeah. And it's hard. Thanks. That is hard to implement. I mean, yeah, I think you're spot on in all of it. It's doing it.
Yeah.
It's having that hard conversation. It's telling someone that you know that's worked here a long time that, you know, doesn't do a bad job, but is not doing anything to chase the best version of their role and their function and really where their career, like, selfishly, and I've told so many of our people this, like, there is so much opportunity with a young startup company. I would say 11, 12-year-old startup company is young in the grand scheme of how long village caregiving could exist. Like, if you have a young guy or gal that is pursuing excellence and the best version of themselves in their role today, where could they be in 5 years? Mm-hmm. How much money could they be making?
Like, that's exactly right. I was thinking about this morning. Let's say that you're listening to this and you just don't have the most God-given talent. You know?
Yep.
It happens. I can tell you this. If you become the best version of yourself that you can be, I can promise you you're going to be better than 95% plus of the other people because they won't do
that. They won't do it.
They might have been born with better gifts, but they will not put that work in. And you can get ahead that way. You just got to do it, and it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. And I think the most challenging thing for me is seeing it. You know, when we see it in somebody, they don't see it themselves. That is where I have struggled the most is you try to show them the path. You try to shine light on, man, this is what you could be doing in 5 years. Yeah. This is how much I was sitting with some guys. This has been a year or so ago. Some young guys, smart guys. I was like, you guys should all be making $500,000 a year. They all just laughed, and they were just, I'm like, no, seriously, you should be making $500,000 a year. And they couldn't wrap their brain around it.
No, they couldn't at all.
And that's what blows my mind is I know what the industry can afford to pay some of the best. I know how much money is floating around. Like, I'm sure in your industry, there are, like, the best of the best. If you see your career all the way through, and you become the best version of yourself possible. Like, if I think if our company becomes the best version of itself, I see what potential is out there. I think that for myself, I drew this curve at the beginning of the year. Yeah. Kate calls it the power curve, but it's really, I drew a graph and it's like, hey, the company, the organization is going to continue to trend upward. We're going to grow. We're going to innovate. We're going to do things differently. If you as an individual, and this is everyone on the team, do not follow the same curve, you're getting left behind. Me included as the leader. Yeah. And so, you know, I think this pursuit of excellence thing, I'm honed in on it now more than ever because I'm feeling the pressure as the guy, right? I want to keep up with the opportunity that the organization has. I don't want to be the guy, I don't want to be the rev limiter. And there's been times here where I've been the rev limiter keeping us from where we want to go. And I'm committed to not letting that be the case.
Same. I told this story when I started Stegan. You guys will remember, you go around and that first night, it's so awkward. No one knows anybody. The room is silent. You can hear a pin drop. And you introduce yourself and they give you a little card to fill out. Name, title, locate, where you came from. The last question says, why are you here?
Yeah.
Right? So I stand up and I tell this insane story of how I heard a guy on a podcast named Keaton Turner, and then we became buddies through some random luck. And he told me I should sign up for Stegan. So what I told the room, I was like, I'm the guy that probably has the least business even being in here. Like, this is wild. You guys, a lot of them come from organizations that send multiple people. This makes no sense, right? So that's how I got here. Why I'm here, I'm just going to be honest, I don't know. I'm searching for something that maybe later on the answer will be revealed to me. In as much as the business part matters, is it's exactly what you just said. My fear is that I'm the limitation on how good the company can be. And in our industry and in my personal experience with being an entrepreneur, the boat is now way out there in the water. We're in uncharted territory. I don't know what's out here, and I've never done this before.
Yeah.
I would like to not crash this thing into the rocks.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get better myself because I'm afraid I'm the guy that might be the problem
here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm same way. And that's my biggest fear. And that's why I'm so passionate about, I've got to figure out how to become this best version of myself. You know, little bitty decisions every day, whether it's health decisions or coaching decisions or spending time with people like you that are going to push me to be a little bit better. Like, if I don't become the best version of myself, there's not a chance this company becomes the best version. It just doesn't.
Yep.
So
I like, Jeff, how you tied together two of our values, and it's something we had mentioned previously, but we've always had a value of a heart for people. And when we first talked about this pursuit of excellence or an attitude for excellence, because we like making it about the person, value, some of the pushback or some of the questions, I should say, because I don't know if it was necessarily pushback, was like, but how does that jive with a heart for people? And when you talked about how you felt it as your responsibility for that person to help make them the best version of themselves in the way that you can, right? Like, you're not going to control someone's life, but at least in the way you can, I think that's actually showing some of the best heart for people. It's the way we think about our kids, right? We don't expect our kids to be perfect by any stretch of your imagination, but we hold them to high standards. And it's not because we're jerks to our kids. It's because we love them and we care about them probably more than everybody else. And so it's like the dad who's the coach on the baseball team. And it's like, oh, he's hardest on his son. And it's like, well, yeah, because he loves his son the most. Like, I get that. And so I think that kind of keeping that, why are we pursuing excellence? Why do we believe that having an attitude for excellence is so important for every single individual? It's because we actually care about them. I love that you said that.
That's exactly right. I would add more to it, but you summed it up perfectly. I don't want to ruin it.
Well, we've been doing this. We could do this all night. We're not going to do that. We're going to go eat steak, and I'm going to watch you guys drink wine and whatever else you drink.
Sorry. 75 hard, man.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Dude, I'm cracking Bloomington Brewing Company beers, just drinking water.
What do you think, Thomas? What should we get? Let's talk about it a little bit in front of him.
Good wine. Good wine would be nice. I could be down with some good wine.
Probably the best one.
Two glasses. I can eat steak.
We'll drink it really slow.
Really slow. I'll smell it. Yeah, I can smell it.
Maybe hold it under his nose.
Yep. I was just telling you guys before we got on here, I'm about a third of the way through this one. I've done this before. This is the second time I've done it. I am already feeling, and it's way too early to feel this way. Like, I want this one to be over. You know, the last one, I carried this, like, honeymoon phase of doing the program. Like, the first 30 days were, you know, not bad, and you're pretty amped up to try to do something hard. And you get to, like, the day, you know, 30 to 40, 45, something hard happens. You're like, I'm done. You're two-thirds of the way done at that point. You're like, I'm done. I could stop today, be good. I'm only a third of the way done, and I'm already there. Like, I've been super close. I'll tell you, the only thing that's kept me from quitting this one, to be honest with you, like an idiot, I posted on Instagram that I was doing this. Yeah. And so now I got how many thousands of people that are, like, waiting for me to fail. And I know they are waiting for me to fail.
Public accountability.
Oh. It was the stupidest thing I've ever done.
You got to do that. That's why I went through at the Running of the Bulls last summer. I told so many people I was going to do that, that when I got there, the day before I saw a guy, I think, dies, head split open on the street. They took us on a tour, six couples, my wife and I. Every single one of them said, we thought this was safer than this. This is insane. Well, I would have probably backed out too, but I'd already told everybody I was going to do it. I'd rather not go home than have to come back to that humiliation.
Yeah, well, it would be terrible.
So we lived, and it was okay, but man, there's nowhere to get out of the way, and there's no way to jump out. The police will push you back in because you're viewed as a hazard to the flow of the people running. Oh my gosh. Nowhere to go. But yeah, public accountability is huge. I'm surprised you can even do 75 hard. You know why? Not because you're not a tough guy or you don't have, you know, do hard things. It's your authority problem. Yeah. I won't do that because it's just somebody else making me do something.
So the problem is it's myself telling myself I have to do it. Yeah. So it's a...
Why don't you make up Keaton's hard?
Cast 22. Oh, I'm going to rename it to something much cooler.
Yeah. You already know that's what I did. We've talked about it.
Yeah. Oh,
that's the best.
Okay, before we're done, because we're going to carry this conversation on into dinner and everything else, anything else you want to leave us with? Yeah. Any questions you have for us? Any thoughts? I normally ask people, you know, leave us with a word of wisdom for our employees that are going to listen to this, right? They probably would love to hear from a different CEO that's not me for a change. But I'm going to leave the floor open. I'm going to crown you while you're thinking, because I can see you thinking. I don't know that many... I don't know anybody in your position. I do know a couple guys, actually, and it's in a group that Thomas and I have been in. But several CEOs, acquaintances, some of them are friends, some of them are people I just know from afar. I'm going to crown you my favorite CEO.
Yes.
For a lot of reasons.
There might be some people who listen to this.
And that's okay. You know, I
heard there's no edits.
Hey, no. We're not editing anything. I'm just saying he might be getting some texts once this one drops.
I get plenty of hate now, so send it away. You're my favorite CEO, and I say that, you know, in all sincerity. And there are some legit people, but I think you are so in tune with emotional intelligence. And you care. So I've seen you care so much about your people, which I think is such a missing quality in so many leaders that I listen to and seek advice from. I think you are the most interesting person. Like, any CEO that gets on an airplane and wants to make a friend, like a lifelong friend, he still texts some of these people he's met on an airplane for the first time.
No, it's wild.
Like, you truly care about humans, not even just your own employees, just humans in general, in a way that makes me feel like a terrible person.
Well, we would probably be in the more terrible person bucket when it comes to just a random.
You push me to be a better person. You don't know that. I don't tell you that enough, but yeah, you're my favorite CEO. So,
thanks, man. Yeah, you know what? I do. I really do care about people. I love people. It's the best part of the whole world. If I was here by myself with unlimited resources, it would still be terrible. I don't have anybody to share it with. I love people. Anyway.
True story. I mean, this is real. And if Aaron were here, he could tell you the real stat. Like, you know everyone on your team's birth date.
Yeah, he loves to play this trick at our annual meeting. We'll make a couple hundred people in the room, and he'll say, five people stand up, and Jeff will tell you your birthday. It's a thing.
Their birth dates. Like,
it's a way
for celebrate birthdays. I swear to you. Promise. I don't say happy birthday in our Slack channel to anyone here. Jake had a birthday here, I don't know, a few weeks ago.
Yep.
I didn't say happy birthday. I don't believe in birthdays.
Like, don't believe in them.
No. Think about the concept. Why would you celebrate the day that your mother gave birth? You didn't do anything.
Yeah, it's my mom's day.
Your mom's day.
You're right.
She should be the one celebrating. She got rid of you.
For all the moms out there, they should really celebrate on their kid's birthday.
Yeah, I agree. You weren't. That. You didn't do anything to get celebrated.
I mean, you're right. I started to make a joke. On my birthday, and if my mom listens to this, love you, Mom. And thank you in advance of my birthday. Right, Keaton.
She better listen to this.
She probably will. She likes Aaron on our podcast. That's her favorite host. I just happen to be there.
I have got to say, Aaron's a great host. He doesn't even compare to me. Not a chance.
Well,
I'll go toe-to-toe with him on that.
We have to. Battle Royale.
That is the best. Can you imagine?
We need to do a poll. Get everyone to listen to Aaron and then come back and listen to me.
Just trying to get you to each compare hosting, taking hosting duties.
That's clickbait fuel there. Okay, what words are you leaving us with I can go smell your wine?
Yep. And by the way, that wasn't a joke that I'm going to hold it under your nose. I am.
I can't wait.
Just FYI. I've got a question for you. And then I'm going to leave you with the thought you asked for. So here's my question.
Okay.
You got to promise to be honest.
I'm always honest.
Okay, good. So let's say you're doing 75 hard.
Mm-hmm.
You come up to day 74. You're right there. Dude, you've made it, right? How much money would somebody have to pay you to quit after 74 days and be honest?
Oh, man.
You know, I don't know how you come up with these questions.
This is a great
question. Here's the thing. If it were the first time doing the program, the number's a lot higher.
I want a number.
Because I've already done the program.
Higher is an adjective.
It wouldn't have to be that high. It'd probably just be like a super cold martini would get me to quit. You know, really cold Busch Light. Like, I mean, you get to 74 days. I'm also not I don't live in such a fairy tale. It's just another day, right? I don't get any trophy for it. I get self-satisfaction to know I did it. But if you called me on day 74 and said, dude, I'm stranded in Australia, get on a 24-hour flight to come here.
Yeah.
Sure.
I know you would do that, and I believe you. But what if you're just sitting on your couch and you have no good reason on earth, and somebody says, how much money would it take?
It need to be four digits, probably.
That's it?
Four digits. I mean, yeah, you talk of a few thousand. Again, if it's the first time.
The first time, what do you think the number
was? Oh, man. I just needed to prove to myself I could do it the first time.
Yeah.
And
so you're not going to be bought.
It's probably really difficult to buy it the first time. Because I think I got to the end and I told myself, I want to live like this, but I don't know if I could go through the program without missing a beat a second time. I don't know if I'll be able to do it the second time.
Oh,
I really don't.
We're going to, you're
21 or 2 days in. Like,
dude, you're going to do it.
I feel like I could screw it up still.
Well, we can always screw it up.
Well, you never know. Okay. I was just trying to get him in trouble. Maybe he said like $10 million and sounded real out of touch.
No, it's way cheaper than that. I am a cheapskate.
Making sure.
I buy my boots on eBay, dude.
Those are some nice looking boots you got on
eBay. Yeah. These were probably, I think these were a gift. These are Luke Casey's, but okay. I've bought Luke Casey's on eBay.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your words of wisdom?
These are the last words of wisdom. And again, this is Jeff right now in this time in 2024 giving this. That. And I will listen to this in a year or five or 10 and think that I'm an idiot. Yep. But this is me right now.
Love it.
What I have, I'm in this season of really believing, and we've already talked about it, that practicing humility is the most important thing you can do because it unlocks everything else. It will make you a better spouse. It will make you a better friend. It will make you better at work. It will make you closer with God. It will do any. If you allow yourself to just simply say, I am a humble person and I don't know everything and I've got a lot to learn in my life and I don't always need to be right, and that's okay. All the other stuff flows from it really naturally. And why I say practicing humility is you have to practice it. You just don't one day get out of bed and be like, I'm humble. I want to be humble now, so I'm going to be humble. And then it's a practice. You practice humility the same way that you practice a jump shot. You need reps at doing it. It's walking into this meeting, and I don't need to be the star of the show. I don't have to be heard every time I have a thought. It's getting into a fight with your wife or your husband. I don't have to be right every time. Yeah. Relationship with a friend, you may not understand your faith. Just be curious enough to want to learn about it and be humble in the process and practice that day after day after day, and then you begin to embody it. And I'm trying to get there. It sounds preachy, but, dude, I'm a work in progress. Yeah. But I'm trying, and I think it's really, really important.
You are just a stoic. I mean, that was profound. I could not agree more. And it's been something that I've struggled with. People know I've joked about my ego forever on this show. And I think if you joke about it and are aware of it, that's kind of the first step in admitting you have one. And
yeah, me too.
I think every founder CEO does. But
absolutely.
Humility's hard. Mm-hmm. Especially with my spouse. Like, it's easier for, like, me and Thomas to sit here and, like, they're his ideas. He gets the credit for it. Or some of our team, like, when you get home and you're, like, tired and you've been working all day and your wife says something, you're like, you know what? I don't need to listen to that. And fortunately, we know each other well enough now to where I can, you know, say things and she can just kind of blow me off. Like, yeah, okay, you need to go to bed. But true humility is tough with the people you love the most and are the closest with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a great call to action.
Yeah.
So we're going to check back in on you next year and see if that's still your thought or if you're onto something more profound.
Yeah.
That would be great. I would love to.
Yeah. That was good. That was awesome.
This was a blast.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. You guys are so good to me. I mean, honestly, I would want to get one good thank you in. Love Turner Mining Group. Love everything about you guys. Love you guys.
I've robbed more wisdom from you than vice versa. So
I don't know.
I appreciate all of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to end this the way I've been closing it. And I will say this to your mother, Jeff. If you've liked the podcast, click like, share, subscribe, send it to someone you like. If you've hated it, send it to someone you hate. Thanks, guys.
See you, everybody.
This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live. Live, live, live.